Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson, who walks us through where things stand on the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack was on Capitol Hill to defend the Biden administration's budget request for the Department of Agriculture. The budget requests 8% more funding for discretionary programs in the 2025 fiscal year, but that figure is unlikely to be met by a cash-strapped Congress. Vilsack appeared before the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee, the same panel where last year he and Chairman Andy Harris shared a tense exchange on USDA's use of the Commodity Credit Corporation. This year, the two had a similarly spirited discussion on nutrition programs. The Environmental Protection Agency announced a final tailpipe emission standards rule to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from light and medium-duty vehicles starting in 2027. The new regulations are part of a broader Biden administration goal to fight climate change. The agency says electric vehicles could account for up to 56% of vehicles sold for model years 2030 through 2032. However, critics, including those in the biofuels sector, say the rule is too reliant on EVs to meet climate change goals. And finally, the House Ag Committee held a hearing on China's threat to American agriculture. The hearing was convened as the issue has been in the spotlight by states across the country, passing laws to prohibit ownership of farmland by overseas investors, specifically those from Russia, Iran, North Korea, and China. USDA's most recent report on foreign farmland ownership in the U.S. shows China owns less than 1% of all foreign-held agricultural land. However, Chinese holdings are a major point of debate between both parties. Chinese companies have also purchased controlling interests in agribusinesses like Smithfield and Syngenta. House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson says he wants to make sure the attention on the issue doesn't harm American agriculture.
I'm very concerned. The hearing was basically the threats that China is posing to American agriculture. That was the theme. We had two great panels, including Governor Noem, who has put some safeguards in place in South Dakota. We had our chair and a ranking member for the select committee on basically the Chinese Communist Party and the threats. The threats are real. There's no doubt about it. We're looking at not just the purchase of American agriculture production land, also processing, but it goes beyond that. It looks at the stealing of intellectual property, of the control of intellectual property when it comes to being able to respond to basically agriculture needs in the future, the impacting of research, the amount of investment that China legitimately is doing in research, and this is why we need to increase what we're doing in research as a part of the Farm Bill. The threat is real, and we have a responsibility to be proactive in responding to it.
Well, given the fact that it is an election year, government funding for FY24 took a while, and FY25 is getting started now. There's, of course, the little thing called the Farm Bill that we're going to be talking about here in a bit. A lot of things on the congressional agenda. So I say all that to ask, what, if anything, should the American people expect Congress to do on this subject, perhaps yet this year?
Well, we've already done it within the AgApprobes. When you do appropriations, it's only good for a year. So it's just through the end of the fiscal year. And we have added the Secretary of Agriculture and his or her designee to the CFIUS committee, which is an interagency committee that reviews the sale of all strategic assets. And I think this is of critical importance. I think it's gotten people's attention. We had great bipartisan interest yesterday by both Republicans and Democrats on the Agriculture Committee, all uniform. Now, there is a balance, and I think that balance got raised. I mean, we do appreciate China buying a lot of our agriculture commodities, and so we want to maintain that. But at the same time, you can't allow this illegal activity. And this isn't about any individual of any ethnic origin. This is about purchases are made under the thumb and under the influence of the Chinese Communist Party. I want to be very clear about that. Mm-hmm.
Let's pivot our conversation over to the farm bill. You said for a while that, you know, perhaps late last year, you were saying March might be your window. You know, we've heard some scuttlebutt that folks are maybe now looking at April. With the government funding issue specifically for USDA and FDA behind us and things moving to another area, how realistic now do you think is that potential April window for farm bill movement at the committee and potentially even floor level?
Well, I think it's becoming more realistic. We're still waiting on the Congressional Budget Office for some final analysis of some titles. We like to double check our math. So we've got a lot of new bipartisan, mostly bipartisan proposals that are great ideas that we've I've been working at baking into this farm bill language. Really pleased how the farm bill has come together. I call it tripartisan because I've got both parties at the table and the American agriculture industry, their voices. We, as you know, worked hard to bring the voices of the American farmer and rural America to the table with all the travel that we've done, the listening sessions. Now, we are still working through some of the issues of how you pay for it. We may need for the new priorities, and many of these priorities are bipartisan. Democrats want them, Republicans want them. You know, that somewhere could be somewhere north of $75 billion in additional funding. There are no new dollars, so we have to find out within our area of jurisdiction. And we're having, I think, some productive conversations on that, on how do we achieve that.
We'll have more Farm Bill conversation with Chairman Thompson right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Earlier this week, Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow said many of the Farm Bill's titles are in pretty good shape on the Senate side of Capitol Hill. And on the House side, Chairman Thompson says the same could be said there as well.
Well, I think all 12 titles are actually in a really good place. Obviously, these last analyses will help us with Title I. How much is able to stay in the bill? If we don't get bipartisan support in terms of pay force, some of those bipartisan priorities will have to come out of the bill because you have to pay for it, right? It has to be, it really has to be cost neutral. Now we can add money from our area of jurisdiction, like I said. And so there'll be some last minute tweaks depending on how my Democratic colleagues come to the table. They've got great proposals we've incorporated into the bill. But I think all 12 titles are in a real strong position for in the House. Mm-hmm.
Have conversations with committee Democrats about some of your conservation and nutrition policy and spending ideas, have those conversations generated any additional, hard and fast support that you're counting on when it comes to committee and floor consideration?
Well, I certainly hope so. We're having lots of conversations in that space. I've really demonstrated, and whether that's how it's received and how they ultimately vote, we'll have to see. But, with the Inflation Reduction Act monies, by doing what we want to do with it, would allow us to do significant investments in conservation, between what we already have in the baseline, adding to it some significant dollars from the IRA. And on top of that, the executive branch, the USDA is working hard to, get the regulations in place to operationalize the Sustains Act, which would bring in public-private dollars. Conservation is going to be in a really strong place. And it gives us the flexibility to be able to fund what we know are other priorities as well, that bipartisan priorities increase, the trade programs, research, the Title I commodities, the safety net programs. The same thing with on the nutrition side. You know, we've been making the case that there'll be no cuts to the benefits that individuals or families are struggling financially to their SNAP benefits. My proposal actually maintains the cost of living adjustment, which is really the main factor when it comes to affordability of food. And right now that's going up, and you know, with inflation that we've seen, we maintain cost of living adjustment, but it also is a safeguard from a future kind of a hard right administration coming in and just arbitrarily cutting benefits for these struggling families. So it's the best of all worlds. And at the end of the day, it gives us a significant pay for to be able to invest in these bipartisan priorities.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping up here, obviously we're in an even numbered year and also in a year divisible by four. How do you plan to use or leverage or maybe work around the fact that it is an election year as you try to move this upcoming farm bill?
You know, it would seem like that would be make things more difficult. I don't think it does. When you look historically, we've done rather large things, not just in agriculture, but other committees, and have enacted significant legislation into law, even in election year. We do need to move this farm bill sooner than later. The American farmer, those hardworking farm families, ranch, forestry, the people of rural America, quite frankly, every American family, because they're all the benefactors of a robust agriculture industry. They need us to do our job, and I'm looking forward to the House leading on that here, hopefully in the very near future.
Very good. Chairman Thompson, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Spencer. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the state of American ag acreage in this week's Map It Out.
USDA's latest census of agriculture shows most states are losing agricultural land. This map shows the percent change in agricultural land by state between 2017 and 2022. Hawaii lost more than 7%. Other states that lost more than 5% include Maine, New York, Washington, Colorado, Virginia, and Massachusetts. The country as a whole lost a little more than 2% of its farmland. On the other hand, three states gained ag acres: Alaska, Alabama, and Rhode Island. According to the census, there is still more than 880 million acres of farmland across the country, which accounts for about 39% of all American land. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Let's talk trade, China, and the Farm Bill with a couple of folks keeping a very close eye on those subjects. Joined for that conversation by Virginia Houston with the American Soybean Association and Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Virginia, I want to go to you first because obviously we saw this week, the House Ag Committee convening a hearing on China's influence on American agriculture. And I guess I got to ask you, what does this increased focus on China ultimately mean for the American soybean producer, given their importance as an export market?
China is our largest market, bigger than the rest of the world combined. In the last marketing year, we shipped about $32 billion worth of U.S. soy across the world. China consumed $19 billion of that. To put it quite simply, one in three rows of soybeans grown in the U.S. is destined for the Chinese market. Yesterday's hearing was a really great opportunity for ASA President Josh Gackle to share the perspective of U.S. soybean growers and remind Congress that as they look to deal with China in the geopolitical sense. And we recognize there are myriad issues when it comes to Beijing, and whether it's human rights, intellectual property theft, technology transfer, those sorts of things, to remember that there's a very real economic relationship for U.S. agriculture, particularly soybean growers. President Gackel was able to share his story as far as what we went through in the 2018 trade war and how long it took us to rebuild that market, and how we still are facing some long-term lingering issues. While we regained market share into China as far as sales goes, the trade war did long-term reputational damage to U.S. soy as a reliable provider. So we wanted to remind the committee that as you look to really big, important issues, just don't forget that U.S. agriculture does need export markets, and China is our biggest one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the days around that trade war, there was talk about the need for the U.S. to diversify its export markets, particularly within the soybean sector, given that importance for that particular commodity. So those conversations have been going on for a long time, have intensified since 2018. Candidly, how are they going?
They're going really well. So, from the trade war, that's one thing we really did learn is the importance of diversification. And to be quite honest, U.S. soy has done a really good job diversifying markets. There are several markets that we saw in 2018, 2019, such as Ecuador and Egypt, that we were able to build up those markets and grow more demand for U.S. soy. But as President Gackel reminded the committee yesterday, the issue is not diversification of markets. U.S. soy is actively working in 112 markets around the globe. The issue is diversification of scale, because as I mentioned, the scale of China's demand for soybeans just outpaces any other country in the globe by far. So when we look to diversify markets, you can diversify and build up a lot of little markets, but unfortunately, they still don't meet the scale of what China buys from the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Mike, bringing you into the fold here and just taking maybe a broader read on the dynamics of Capitol Hill, we've seen many states move some kind of language on the overseas acquisition of American farmland. But I wonder, as you look at Congress, do you think there's any potential that something like that could be considered on Capitol Hill, given the political winds that are blowing right now, given the fact this is an election year, a lot of impacts on that potential conversation?
Yeah, it's clear that there's a lot of interest at the state level and the grassroots level about the concerns around Chinese acquisition of farmland and other parts of the agriculture sector. I think some of the movements that we've been part of, Farmers Union's been part of, and other organizations as well, is about including USDA in the Committee for Foreign Investment in the U.S., or CFIUS. That's picked up renewed steam over the last few weeks, few months, and I expect we'll see some more progress on that. So the grassroots are really interested in this, and I think that might move into some sort of legislative action in the coming weeks and months.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. National Farmers Union lobbyist Mike Strand says NFU is hoping to see farm bill movement, and potentially soon.
It certainly seems like there's nothing to be gained by waiting longer and longer. And that window of opportunity, now that maybe government funding is squared away at least for a few more months, and there's a bit of an open path for the next couple of months, might mean that there's a chance at an April the farm bill, whether that's in a committee or just getting things further along down the line. So I think the window's opening, and hopefully we can move ahead on that soon.
Mm-hmm. The 18 bill seems to be reasonably popular. I mean, would an extension of that legislation necessarily be a bad thing if it came to that?
Well, we've had to do it once already, right? And the 18 bill, of course, came during the midst of what we were just talking about here, too, on the China trade disputes. And We saw the need for ad hoc programs, either for disasters, man-made, or through trade issues, or through weather-related disasters. So I think we need to make sure that the Farm Bill is taking care of things on the downside that might come along with future struggles on trade or weather. So hopefully we don't get to the point where we're renewing the 2018 Farm Bill much more, but we've had to do it before, and if that's what it takes, I guess we'll have to move ahead with that.
Mm-hmm. Virginia, I want to wrap up the conversation with you because we did see last year, we saw the Department of Agriculture act to do some trade promotion funding through the Commodity Credit Corporation. Obviously, the doubling of the Market Access Program and Foreign Market Development Program has been a longstanding priority for many farm groups, ASA included. So I wonder, given USDA's action through the CCC, is increasing that trade promotion funding through the Farm Bill something that is still a priority for farm groups and you think politically something's still on the table?
Absolutely. So we're really appreciative of the USDA announcement of the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program, as you mentioned, using CCC funds to offer some additional funding for long-term investment and export promotion programs. But this is more of a short-term bridge. It does not negate the need that both the Market Access Program and the Foreign Market Development Program are extremely popular, proven programs at USDA. They are underfunded and they are oversubscribed. And there is a real need for additional mandatory dollars to be given to those programs to help cooperators and ag groups like ASA promote our products abroad, particularly when we are looking at a trade arena where there's not a traditional focus on free trade agreements that include tariff reducing measures and market access issues. So that's why MAP and F&D are so important. And that's why ASA is continuing to push for a doubling in the next Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, trade and China-related issues so critical for this week's ag policy news, but the Farm Bill obviously going to be a focus going forward. Virginia and Mike, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through some important tax policy issues in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The estate tax could hit more farms and ranches when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions expire at the end of 2025. The 2017 tax bill doubled the estate tax exemption, and this chart shows the change in the percent of estates owing tax with and without the legislative changes. As you can see, when the bill expires, more farms and ranches will owe the tax. However, this change would affect large and very large family farms the most. Currently, only 2.8% of large farms are taxed and 6.9% of very large farms. This would rise to 7.3% and 8.5% respectively. When the higher exemption amount expires, about 1% of farm states would end up owing the estate tax. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
In the spring of 2014, I got a phone call that changed my life. It was a job offer and an opportunity to join the staff of AgriPulse Communications. It's difficult to put into words what the last decade has meant for me personally and professionally. I have published stories that move the needle on important issues, and I've chased leads that went nowhere. I've built lifelong relationships, and I've helped friends pack their bags and move to the next step in their lives. But through it all, I've constantly thought back to something I was told when I was offered that job, that this company's purpose is to help farmers and ranchers better understand the policy process. For the last 10 years, I've seen that mission in action when producers ask me what was going on with their government. Being in a position to help answer that question has been an honor and a privilege that I promise you I did not take lightly. That's why it's bittersweet to share that my time with AgriPulse has come to an end. To say that I've enjoyed my time here would be an understatement, and the reasons for that are far too numerous to share. But honestly, it all boils down to people. To the people who spent time helping me provide better informed coverage, thank you. To the people who listened, watched, and read the work I've done throughout my career, thank you. And to my colleagues at AgriPulse, past and present, I truly can't thank all of you enough. The work you all do on a daily basis is incredible, and it has been the thrill of a lifetime punching above our weight together. And lucky for everyone in American agriculture, I'm confident this team will continue to do outstanding work, and I'm excited to watch that happen. But for now, it's time to sign off for the final time. I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.